Getting rather overwhelmed with the whole subject. As you know, the subject started around 64 with Brown Andrea, Higgs, Kravnik, Egan, Kibble, and it's continuous integrating. And 67, Wagner's arm, the 2 week model, Gary got the standing room. And thousands of papers have been published on the subject since then. We're talking close to 50 years. And it's just totally overwhelming. So redesigning this theory is daunting, and we'll proceed. So I'll start with some comments about the standard electroweak model, the Higgs particle, and then move on to occasion gradient local electroweak theory, and then a mineralized occasion gradient electroweak theory, and then I'll just bring in the subject of symmetry breaking, and breaking the symmetry with a particle measure, and then I'll get to calculation of the row parameters and the basic energy scale of the theory, and the W, fermion masses, string Dyson equations and fermion masses, running the coupling constants in the entirety, and I'll draw some kind of conclusions. A lot of this is technical, has to be by nature. So I'll have to skim through a lot of the details. This is a great video. And I apologize for this beforehand. I found out that I could give a course of lectures on this subject. So it's all condensed into less than an hour. So we start with the standard electroweak model, the Higgs particle. Now, as we all know, standard VW model gains mass for regarding the Z bosons, keeping the force of masses by introducing a classical scalar field into the action. The scalar degree of freedom is a synthesis of transformers and isospin doublet, spontaneously breaking SU2 plus U1 by a Higgs mechanism at the purely classical true graph level. The idea of SU2 plus U1 for weak interactions originated with Jean and Schwinger in 1859. His graduate student, Sheldon Glashow, was told to investigate this problem by his professor. And so he published a paper in Nuclear Physics, as it was called then, in 1961. And it was totally ignored, because zero citations until 1967, with the Steve Weinberg letter in Physical Reinvent. I talked to Robert Bragg about this, Bragg on the Andrea team, and he said he'd never heard of Glashow's paper, issue 2 question 1, in 1964. And that's why the spontaneous energy breaking paper, Physical View Letters, was based on scalar electrical dynamics, the scalar field phi, and a vector field, photon vector field, AU. And therefore, Anderson, Philip Anderson of Princeton, claims to have originated it all, because that's what he did effectively in the condensed matter physics. In 1958,
so there's
a quick summarize of the history of this subject.
Yeah. The legend that Glashow only got that project, Schwinger had apparently a list of projects.
Yes.
Simply the order at which the graduate students came in was off.
They stood in queues.
As to which project they got.
They would come in. You know.
So the guy before him, I can't remember, he was doing something that's totally irrelevant.
They just gave them out like this.
So he just happened to be the guy that walked in the door. In the right order.
Amazing, isn't it? How you win the Nobel Prize.
He's also pretty smart.
Hey, yeah. That's also that. So the origin of the symmetry breaking mechanism remains elusive after almost 50 years. So we're talking about the problem that's existed for almost half a century. The standard economics of several explanations contain symmetry breaking, which breaks actually 2 question 1. The breaking is not due to interactions, heartbreaking, but it's softly broken at the asymmetry of the ground state, the vacuum state. Spontaneous energy breaking was actually originally introduced by Werner Heisenberg in the 40s. describe the fundamentals. Now, despite its phenomenological success, political problems prompt search for alternative to the standard EW theory. There's a serious Higgs hierarchy problem, the unstable Higgs mass, and the cosmological constant problem. Spontaneous breaking of SU2 pressure one generates this C number expectation value, where V is the potential lambda 5 to the 4th, and the standard Higgs, classical Higgs mechanism. And when you work it out, you get a vacuum density, which is minus mu to the 4th over 4 lambda, so you can't convert mu into Higgs mass from the action, and you get a vacuum expectation value which is 10 to the 56 times bigger than the observed in cosmology. This is bad.
What does this mean, though? It's not a...
It means we don't understand the
thing. I mean, what does it mean to float that particular number in what theory? Because
you just plug in.
Standard model is a. As a whole, is this the standard model? I mean, I'm not sure what this means.
Standard model of the Higgs mechanism.
Because the standard model is not even, doesn't even have a continuum limit. So what does it exactly mean to standard?
Well, you calculate this vacuum density, and this is what you get by plugging in.
How can you calculate that vacuum density? I'm questioning whether it's a well-defined calculation.
Any potential in terms of some fields.
Are you just saying that the value of the Higgs
field? It's the false vacuum point. V of 0, 0. V at...
that's just one question.
So
you're just saying the energy density of the Higgs.
It's the ground state energy.
Would have that.
When you convert it into a vacuum density.
But there are only zero point energies that have to be. If you could really do the calculation, there would be only zero point energies that would have to be added in of all the fields.
Well, the point is that if you want to get rid of this, you have to introduce a constant with the plus sign. By the way, that's the wrong sign. You have to introduce a constant with the plus sign, and then you have to fine-tune the result to 56 decimal places, which seems ridiculous.
I mean, I agree it seems ridiculous, but I'm just saying I don't understand why that's the only contribution. If you just took the zero-point energy of the...
The other contributions are even worse.
That would be a positive infinity, right? So I could easily cancel out that value.
No. If you start getting into this, this comes directly out of this model. And if you start calculating all the other kind of possible contributions, you get with a cutoff of the Planck energy, and then you get the famous 10 to the 23 times. So, anyway, I don't want to belabor this. It's a matter of opinion, but I think this is a serious problem. The other problem is the Higgs mass receives quadratic divergent corrections from the Higgs loop diagrams. So this can give you 10 to the 36 times the measured Higgs mass. It's a huge number of decimal places to function. So the reason I'm mentioning this is because this has plagued the standard model since 67.
I guess what I'm saying is it's not just a problem of the Higgs, it's a problem of the whole standard model, even with or without. That's really what I'm saying.
Well, in the case of, if you calculate loop graphs, quantum gravity, if you calculate the vacuum density in quantum field theory, particle physics, and it's quantically divergent. One could say, well, we don't know how to do quantum field theory in particle physics. But that's not the case here. Here, you just take the model, the standard model in Higgs, and on the back of an envelope, you get this result. There's nothing specifically technical about it.
The point is, you're going to solve that problem and also.
Yes!
That other problem. So you're just saying there's these two problems.
I'm just setting it up. This was published by.
You're going to solve the whole cosmological constant problem.
Yes, right.
For the whole.
No.
Or just for this.
You solve that problem, which to me is a baby step forward. So this was published, this result was published by Vernon in 1974. He has a disdain for the Higgs particle ever since. Tini Vallum is a very outspoken person. Glashow said that the Higgs particle is like a flush toilet when you hit it, but it's not very attractive. Anyway, so discovering a satisfactory alternative has proved to be highly non-trivial, has engrossed physicists for many years. 1,000 or more papers. Proposed alternatives face severe problems. New particle contributions of less than 1 to 2 TeV level and affect precision EW data, which can generate unacceptably large effects. Significant fine-tuning may be required, at least at the 1% level. These models include the minimum standards of the world, limpics, silicon bosons, extra dimensions. Extensions of the standard EW model, such as Technicon and other composite models, can face unacceptable large flavor change in contributions to CP vibrations. So there's a fair amount of fine tuning involved in using these alternative models to resolve these problems. The minimal EW model, or the Higgs dominant, is consistent with experimental balance of flavor change in neutral currents in CP vibrations. So there have been global fits done in the last 3 or 4 years. And here's one global fit from the Munich group, which agrees with the results of independent fits by the CERN working group and the Technotron working group. And the result is that if you take into account experimental searches and the electron weak data, especially the low energy, precise low energy electron weak data, and the size of the W and Z mass, then this is the value that come out of the Higgs mass. So the errors account for both experimental fits and such. These are the 2 and 3 sigma allowed regions. There's an extra square bracket here because this is a limit. The limit within the limit of the sigmas. And so on the other hand, the result for the standard fit, just take the electric weak theory, say it's correct, take all the data to a global fit to predict the Higgs mass, and you come out with 80 plus 30 minus 23 GeV. And the 2 sigma, 3 sigma intervals are respectively given here. The 3 sigma upper limit is tighter than for the complete fit because of the increase of the gas value of the Higgs mass in the complete fit. So we conclude from this that the minimal collection we model without new particles requires a light case. That's the present status. Here is a picture of corresponding to this global fit, and these dots are the Technotron direct searches results. This is Del chi-square, so what it's saying is that the best probability for finding a Higgs is between 114.4 GeV and 140 GeV. 114.4 GeV is the upper band of the Higgs mass from the exclusion by LEP2. Excludes up to 96% confidence level, the Higgs mass up to 114.4 GeV. So that's the story. This is the best place to look for the Higgs mass at the moment. And this is a result from the particle data group from LEP2. This is the LEP2 exclusion. And you see what the present situation is. The top mass versus the Higgs mass. The top mass is well known, say around 1% accuracy from Technotron. Now, this is the CDF Technotron detector Fermi. And we just want to pause for a moment. About 100 years ago, in a small room smaller than this, during the rest of Rutherford and his Department of Systems performance in a shot alpha particles of metal files, and found that there's a nucleus inside the atom, and so forth. Today, we have these huge machines in order to understand the nature of matter. It's a remarkable thing. This is the hot off the press, January 16th. See here, everyone to the moon, right? The luminosity is about 3 inverse delta bonds. N is equal to cross section times luminosity. So the bigger the luminosity, the more it is. And what this is telling you is that these are 95% confidence limits divided by the standard model expectation. So when you get this curve going crossing that line, that one, then you can begin to, you can now expect to see the Higgs part, and not see it. And from what I gather, we now have a luminosity data of 6 or 7 inverse filter in the back, tetratron. We're analyzing it at present. So these are the projections for one new probability for 2 sigma and 3 sigma of seeing the Higgs particle. And again, the best the probability improves, of course, as you get higher luminosity, and they expect to get between 5 and 10 inverse tetratrons data analyzed by next summer. So there's a race going on. This is quite possible that the tetratron will detect the Higgs or not before the LHC ever gets going. As you know, it's been delayed. It'll take another year for its breakdown on September. If you start off, then it's going to take another year before you can get data. We're talking 2 years. So the whole thing may be over by then, by tetratron. The American wins.
So all this data has been taken already.
Yes. So it's exciting. This is physics. You have a theory and you check it. Okay? That's what it's all about. This is why I'm talking here. Even though we're in the Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics, we forget sometimes, in my opinion, that this is what it's about. Okay. Here we are. Patricia and I, listen to me, she knits to my top. We still looked at this last April. It's absolutely amazing. He said, this is the world the largest experiment ever performed on such money. It's quite unbelievable. Okay, so let's start in on my theory. So first of all, I start with the Gaussian very local electron beam theory. I'm always in 4 dimensions. I never go into higher dimensions. And the theory is, of course, based on the SU2 plus U1. And the Gaussians chose to be a variant under this gauge group. And we had to take into account the color degree of freedom of the strong interaction coefficient 3 color. And this is the Lagrangian. Local Lagrangian, I could start with a local Lagrangian, and it has 4 pieces. This is the free Fermion piece, which we're all familiar with, left and right-handed fermions, quarks and leptons. And this is the usual nomenclature, which just fills you in on the notation. We're all familiar with this. Now, in particular, there is no classical scalar field contribution in the Lagrange. The SU2 generator satisfies the usual.
Can you start the last one for a second? Just for a second. Can you just go back for a second?
Yeah.
1, 5. Oh, I see. Okay.
So the Fermion gauge Bose interaction terms are given here. This is all standard stuff. why is the hypercharge? And usual hypercharge numbers. Now, that is invariant under this local transformation here. This is to order G and G prime. And as mentioned, it's invariant under ratio 2 criteria 1. You can plug these in and you can prove this is true. Quantization is accomplished by the path into performance. And this plays a fundamental role in what comes to say. So this is where the quantum field theory starts. So now we're doing quantum field theory. Before, the action is just classic. And this is the measure. We bring always an operator as a function of some field phi. And now it's the local divergence. In the local case, the very measure is just trivial. So we had to fix the gauge as usual. And we have a gauge parameter C. And when you look at diagonalizing the charge sector, the next thing we need for Poisson sector. So we write this expression here, W plus minus. And then we get these Fermion interaction terms. And this is what you have, W plus minus. T is the pressure to generate. And this is what we have for the box, left-handed box. Lepton part. This is all from the neutron. In the neutron sector, we can mix the fields in the usual way. The Z mu, the V mu. This is sine and cosine of the weak angle, or as well as the Weinberg angle, which is actually introduced by Schwinger and Glashner, not by Weinberg, called the Weinberg angle. The neutral current Fermi interaction now looks like this. And this is what the great result, the Gargamel bubble chamber protected the neutral currents. And this established the issue 2 plus U1 was necessary. It meant you need an extra neutral vector particle beyond the charged couple plus atomic mass. This was a very important. And we have the unification condition here. And there are three coupling constants, E, G, and G prime. So this results in this electromagnetic current, and this is the neutral current that we get from the Gargamel bubble chain experiment. And this is finally the expression for the local interaction of the Gauge. Okay, so now I need to regularize this theory. I want to have a finite quantum field theory so that I can calculate loop integrals in a finite way. I should see if this is necessary. And I can't just use straight normalization theory to do this. So to regularize the fields, I write the fields as non-local fields, SMEA. It's the convolution of the local fields and the function of the plenty momentum space Fourier transform is an entire function. This is important. Entire function means that there are no poles in the complex B squared plane, it only has cuts.
It has cuts, you say?
It doesn't have any poles, that's the essential.
Okay. Because usually entire function doesn't allow either. But that is annoying algorithm.
If we don't have inside functions, you immediately screw up in the entire function.
So I was just saying that the word entire function could be taken to be more restrictive. It could rule out even
you can rule out
branch parts.
That's right. But you can have essential singularities in the Cauchy.
And infinity. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the normal function field 5. This is the local one. This is large, the Lorentz invariant operator distribution. And I choose this distribution here to work, which is the title. And we now write the initial Lagrangian in all local form. So the free part is in terms of the local fields, the interaction part in terms of the non-local. So this indicates the smearing of the interacting field.
So at low energy, thick lambda to infinity, it's
get back to local.
It's local.
Can you go back a second?
Yeah, go.
So what I'm seeing, so it says
little
sign.
Non-local scale, sorry.
So what's the notation here? You have both the
box theory
and non-professional protection. You have both the smeared field and the non-smeared field in your regularized dimension. Are those in that box there?
Yeah.
Go down one. Is that a capital phi or a little
phi? Oh, this is little phi is a local field, and that's capital phi is the smeared field.
So you have both of them in the
that's
regularized
right.
dimension.
Basically, free part is only in terms of local field. Can I explain what this means in a moment? Let's get back. This is a cushion.
What's the little n?
No. Sorry, what's the
what's little? The little n for
m is
that wasn't
this is a mass, but it actually I'm going to be working with completely masses stick. But this is just a descriptive statement. In general you can put in the mass to get the fine order impression. And I'm going to be working with a master stick.
So what physically sets the scale at which things become non-local?
Lambda W, of course, is an energy scale, or length scale, who knows length scale, that sets the energy scale of the field. This will turn out to be very important.
So is this second term, the curly L of capital phi, is that local in capital phi? Is that the idea? It's not local in the little phi, but it's local in the capital phi, or what?
This is the non-local field operator is represented in terms of this Lorentz invariant distribution operator.
But I'm going down.
They're integrating on the Y, that's why it's still local.
No, I'm going down one box.
Yeah.
The last term, is that second term? No. Yeah, there.
This is the interaction Lagrangian.
Is that interaction Lagrangian local in capital phi?
No, it's non-local in capital phi.
So it's non-local in little phi and it's non-local in capital.
Yeah.
So what's the point of introducing capital phi?
Because it makes the theory finite.
No, I mean, depends, but what's the form of the, will you tell us the form of the
yes.
early
Yes, everything will be spelled.
Okay.
So, this has a long story. I published the first paper on this in 1990, 19 years ago. And, this was in the middle of the second spring revolution. And it just got buried by a vast number of spring papers. Okay. Then it was worked out in detail, QED, by Higgins, two students, Evans Clifford, and Richard Wood and myself, probably in 1991, along detailed paper, if you wish to read this. It's a complete solution to the non-local quantum field theory. More recently, I then took up, I then generalized this to electrical theory published in 1991, before the top masters, top Cook was discovered. But this was some two decades before I ever thinking about taking the Higgs particle. So I thought it was rather pointless to continue with this research. And I published it and then went on to other things. So now 19 years later, here I am, redoing this. So recently there's a long paper in FPH, this electrical ignore, and they tell you about, and more recently I've been collaborating with Victor Toth. We have two papers. This is one of them. A long paper spelling everything out correctly. So now we have to alter the quantized form of the pathogen. So we do that. In particular, we have to have the interaction part of the action normal. So this produces this generating function. Curly J is a non-local current. And so you have no local current signs and no local skiing at the field. And the momentum space, you get a one-to-one correspondence between the all local momentum space field operator 5 and the local. Now I perform a field redefinition. I convert my local field into 1 over big G times the local field. Remember that big G was is operating.
So which field is five? Which fields are subjected to this? 5x, that stands for which?
5x is any field.
So it's all the fields, all the
all of them
are treated.
All of them are treated. So field redefinition, this is what we get for the path integral. Now the non-locality is inside the free action. It turns out you have to be convenient to do this. You can do it either way. You can solve you can calculate in the theory with either the interaction actually being non-local on the free. Okay, so we do it this way. And these are the tree graphs fixed by the non-local theory for the bosons.
What's the W's? I don't think you answered the question. So the interaction term that you wrote down before, is that the absolutely standard interaction term?
Yes.
Except that you substitute in.
There's no scalar field. Right.
Oh, okay. So then it is local. So in the sense I was asking, it is local in the non-local field. It's local in the sphere field.
It's local in the sense.
No, I mean, that's not physically local, but it's local in terms of
the
sphere
field. That's right. Now, for convenience, as we discovered in 1991, we define another set of our propagators. Incidentally, there are many papers published on this non-local quantum field. It's got many citations on the spines. A lot of PhD theses are written by hands. If you go to my recent papers, it gives you a long list of all the people who've been involved in this, including graduate students of mine. It's being checked, cross-checked, double-cross-checked. And it works.
How are gauge transformations implemented on the sphere fields? How are gauge transformations implemented on the sphere fields?
I'm going to show. So we have a Bard propagator. And what this does is that when we use the Bard propagator, the sum of tree propagators with these give the causal propagators of local point. So the tree graphs are all strictly local but point line. So the classical theory based on tree graphs is strictly causal. The non-locality only comes through the loop graph, the quantum field theory. Okay, so after the field redefinition, we have to second order copy additional terms coming from fixing the tree graphs, and this is what you get. This is it, in all its glory. Where the S and D are these propagators. And in here, these propagators are multiplied by the chi squared. Remember the non-local distribution operator? So times the local fields. Now, one can show that the second order coupling the non-local Lagrangians in here to find non-linear gauge transformations. So you plug all of this in and you prove that the non-local Lagrangian is invariant under these transformations. You get it here, okay? This amounts to having proved that the non-local action has a Bechi-Rui store shooting BRSP invariants, assuring us that we have a correctly quantized theory to second order. This is important. Now you derive the measure by requiring that the theory may engage into all those loop expansion. This is from the second order, assuring that nothing picks up the first term at one loop. You work in the Feynman gauge, J equal to 1, and we go to clear the momentum space to calculate the loop. The tree graphs, which is the usual tree graph calculations. So The center solving issues out of the ghost and creating momentum space. I work out the ghost graph. This is the self-energy ghost graph. And E1 is the exponential integral of the first kind. These are the coefficients from the SU2 plus U1 generators, SU2 generators. And here you see how the lambda W squared comes in to the calculation. It's a complete calculation. You just plug in exponential integral of first kind, and you get your answer. Next, we compute the Fermi self-energies with massive fermions. So all the masses in the steering now are zero. So this is the answer you get. And this corresponds to having calculated this graph, W and B. Oops. And these are the boson self-energy graphs. This one here is the ghost graph, it's the dotted line. You want all of this out, which is the measure of the cross. This gives you the measure. Now we split the vacuum polarization tensor into longitudinal transverse pieces. This is a standard KVD. And we turn our attention to the fermionic set. So I work out from this formalism what the longitudinal transverse contributions are from the fermion loop. And I get this result, the K and P again. Note that P is proportional to the square of the Euclidean momentum. So when the momentum, Euclidean momentum squared is zero, P is zero. This plays an important role. Everything is worked out, so you just plug in the numbers. Now, to rid ourselves of the longitudinal degrees of freedom, we include a measure contribution for each diagram. So this is the invariant measure of fermions, and we get this answer. The K is given here. Plug it in, we get the measure. This leaves the transverse piece. For the AB sector, we get the following.
But this means you chose the measure to do this, or you derived.
We have to guarantee the Asian variance at this stage, because the theory is masters.
So you choose the measures.
You choose the measures, so that we guarantee the Asian variance to all of them. So, for the BB sector, we get this, the measure, plug it into the action, this is what we calculate for the transverse part, the polarization. W3 sector, we get the following, and so on. Then we can diagonalize the W1 and W2 sector to get the physical W plus minus fields. And this is the answer we get. This result plays the problem role of what follows. For the W3B mixing sector, we get this. This is a mix between W and B. So the very measure is then given by the product of each piece generated. Now we know that the BRST invariance implies Lavoisier identities analogous to those in the local case, which also must be satisfied to all those for that perturbation theory. And you can check it does. Now, we've arrived at the quantum field theory, electric weak theory, which is massless, which is gauging variance to all orders, unitary to all orders, Poincaré invariant to all orders, and finite to all orders. And this is wonderful, okay? And it does what string theory is supposed to do in four dimensions. Okay. In four dimensions.
So do you have any idea whether it's Borel summable or?
It suffers from usual, if you do pure Yang-Mills, then it's almost perfect, but not Borel summable, as we know. There's no perfect quantum field. But I'm going to ignore this problem. Okay, things are hard enough.
So I'm just asking, but you know it's not, it's presumably not Borel summable.
It's not going to be any better than the fast summation is concerned. I've extended this theory to gravity and found a quantum gravity theory, which when I expand around a fixed background is gauging out to odd orders, locally at Lorentzian going to odd orders, diffeomorphism invariant, except that it's against the fixed background. All the graviton loops are finite, so I can calculate cross-sections, which I've done. To me, this is a quantum gravity theory, and since I'm not as ambitious as other people in this building in quantum gravity, to me this is as far as we can go at present for quantum gravity. Because I can calculate a cross-section, it's finite. I can't compare it to any experiment, because there is no quantum gravity experiment. But anyway, formally speaking, this is the kit. Okay, symmetry breaking. Now let's address the symmetry breaking problem by starting with the toy model, the way Brandt, Anglier, Higgs, and Anderson, and Gavali, people being dead. 64. So we start with this action, Masters action, and propagate momentum space vector task in the usual expression. Find engagement, get this. We now add a photon mass term. This breaks, as we all know, breaks the new one engagement. So we will not proceed like that. Instead, we introduce a proper self energy contribution, which I call pi and q squared. Plug this in, and we get this equation of momentum space, and I define the mass of the photon in terms of its bare mass and its self-energy. Now, the trivial perturbative solution leads to a renormalization of the photon self-energy by canceling the quadratic divergence self-energy and leaving the photon mass called renormalization. And it gives us an excitingly successful quantum wave dynamics. However, there's some fast footwork with infinities involved in standard normalization. It's a matter of taste whether you worry about that or not. So, by the way, when I use my regularized quantum field theory, there are no infinities. And I still get the same results as in standard QED.
But in QED, there's no problem in QED, right?
No, so the whole comes out.
No,
I don't care about it, it's renormalizing. No, but it gives the same answers as for standard renormalization. Okay, now we break the vacuum symmetry U1 invariants and alternative by a separate system.
Well, it shouldn't give the same answer to all orders. It should not give the same answer to all orders.
No, well.
Otherwise, it is the standard theory.
No, but
that there was not locality.
We have to go to very high energies to see the non locality, because lambda for the QED is large.
So you mean at low energy it gives the same answer?
If you let lambda go to infinity, then this regularized theory becomes standard point QED renormalization.
Right. So what you're saying is that if you treat your lambda as just a regular, it's supposed to be more than a regulator, but if you imagined it was just a regulator, it would give the same answer
exactly
as the other regulators.
But I'm making lambda a fundamental
constant
of nature. Okay, so I look for some consistent solution power, Nambu, Jonah, Vassinio, Nambu 1, and Valparaiso this year, and the propagated solution now looks like this. You add up all the bubbles. This means you get this result. That's this propagator. This comes in. And we calculate QED, vacuum polarization tensor, it's quadratically divergent. The concept of a simple pedagogical description of symmetry breaking, we can use a cutoff. However, we will implement the non-local values of regularization field theory to make the theory autobiographically complete. So, for me, in the regularized theory I use, the lambda W is not equivalent to a simple naive cutoff. A simple naive cutoff violates your entirety or instant variance. It just screws up the theory. This is not true in my regularized theory. Also, it turns out that But the non-local, the non-local regularized loop theory suppresses high dimensional operations. Okay, so the alternative to the standard Taylor regionalization map is to identify the photon subunit and photon mass. So everything is masses at the classical tree now. And the masses only come in when I start doing loop calculations. The photon creates a virtual Fermi anti Fermi pair, which in turn creates a photon producing a self energy diagram. So the Fermi anti Fermi pair pictures a virtual Fermi condensate, not producing a real condensate, which is virtual condensates through the bubbles. So the photon requires a mass to start a system mass function. Now we go to SU2 to make it less trivial. And we do the same thing again. We find that the tomorrow's order, the non-abelian theory, SU2 picks up a self-energy term, pi is the vacuum polarization. The gauge boson mass squared determined by the eigenvalues of the sequence matrix. So if we consider a group G, which is bulked down into subgroup H, we find the number of particles of G minus the number of particles of H, that proposed boson could be generated. We start with the NG masses gauge bosons, one for each generator, and we apply it to H2 question 1. We find the NG is 4, and H equals 1, and you end up getting W plus W minus the longitudinal piece. Loops, and this gives you a mass. So now we have a mass matrix, M squared AP. This is the mass matrix. Pi is not the red of some scalar field. It comes from the vacuum polarization. Now you diagonalize this mass matrix and obtain the masses of the gauge boson. So you go through this quickly and you find that indeed you get this mass Lagrangian. The U1 remains.
What is the U1 that?
The U1 is the photon
event. Why doesn't the photon get mass too?
Because the I put in a spin of the Fermi anti Fermi loop. I put in the symmetry breaking. That's done by hand. It's not worse than the standard model. The standard model, I have to assume that the scalar field is an isotropic. It could be an isotropic.
So similar assumption.
It could be an isotropic, which could give you the wrong answer. So it's not unique, but it's not worse than what we've been doing for 45 years. Okay, so now we go to these standard results. This becomes the MZ squared in terms of vacuum polarization, and we get the standard tree growth result. Now you introduce this spin one vector, V alpha mu, and you make this identification. You have this breaking, and you get this mass matrix. And you go through the usual results for this mass matrix. And you end up with the rho equal to 1. And the time squared over mz squared plus square theta. Good. Now we get more sophisticated. We start breaking the symmetry with the path information. So we break the SU2 plus U1 down to U, which is not at the classical level, as the standard model. But only through the loops, which is where the non-locality shows up as well. As
is this an alternative description of what you just did, or is it a different mechanism from what you just
it's
did?
It's the alternative, but I'm using a path integral formalism to do my quantum theory. That's why I'm doing it in there. You can use the other way I just expressed, but this is the way I want to do it, because the path integral through the generating function W generates all the propagation. The Feynman rules is what we're looking for.
I've nothing against using this method. Yeah, that's a fine method, but I was just trying to understand if this was a second mechanism or it's just an alternative description of.
It's an alternative mechanism which gives the same answer.
It's an alternative mechanism that gives the same answer. So you have two different ways of bringing.
Give the same answer. You've got to get the right answer.
But they both give the same answer.
Yes.
So So they may be the same.
They're effectively the same, just in different language.
Yeah.
So the 70 breaking method of archontological generates three new degrees of freedom, a scale and algorithm bosons that give the time of longitudinal modes, which makes them massive while retaining a massive function. That's
I have some, I mean, this, since this is somehow a key point.
I'm running out of time.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I can answer questions. I'm happy to answer your questions. We've got another crowd coming in. We want to mix obviously B to get a mass and say, etc. So we really we look at this self-energy contribution and we get these results for the longitudinal and transverse ties. Polarization tensor. And remember the K's and the P's and the L's and M's are given here. And this is the F, little FM1 and 2. It's the Fermion mass. So I have a way of getting Fermion masses which I explain. So we insert this into the quadratic terms in the action interval, and you get the corrected property. Note the masses come in, so the vacuum polarization. So,
so would you say that the gauge symmetry is still there in the freedom?
Sorry, what?
Is the gauge symmetry broken?
Now it's broken. But it's like, broken. The action is still.
Is it? It's not linearly realized.
The action is still gauge degree. So it's a hidden.
The action, but the measure is not. The measure is not
exact.
So does that mean it is actually the gauge symmetry is actually broken? In the standard model, people always say it's
a hidden
symmetry. It's not. It's not really realized. The symmetry is actually
broken. Yeah,
that's it. Is the same true here?
Yeah, it's very similar. But there's no Higgs field. So I just carry on. I had to skip a lot of this because it's, anyway, you keep going like this. And, you keep calculating the measure that you need. You keep doing this, plugging it in, get the measure for W3B, etc. And you do these calculations. And you've now got the ZZ piece. And this has a longitudinal piece here. And the ZZ part, you get this transverse part. It's all worked out. And the pure photon sector, you get this result, which is proportional to the P. Now remember the P is here, and it's proportional to the square of the Euclidean momentum. So when the square of the Euclidean momentum is zero, pi is zero is zero, which is the trademark of the gauge degree theory. It's a trademark of the massless photon. So we're there. Okay. Got it. Now we make the identification of the vector particles. In fact, made up of the transverse part of the pi, of the fermion contribution from the roots. The boson parts remain gauging. This allows us to calculate the masses of the W and Z. And conversely, using the experimentally known masses to calculate the mass of W. So we proceed with this. This is now the propagated for longitudinally polarized vector bosons. And here's your mass, which runs, the p squared. And this differs from the standard Higgs model, the electronic model, because there you just have the mass of the vector part. It's a fixed number. This is not true here, Higgs model. Okay, so we require this self-consistency equation. And this is what we get for the dot pi, this pi here, for the z. The answer in terms of K, L, and P, which I gave you. this contains electrically coupling constant, the Weinberg angle, Fermion masses, the lambda W prime. Or has all of these except lambda W known from experiment. This equation, self consistent equation, knowing that this, these K's and P's and, contain. Lambda, yeah. We can calculate lambdas knowing from these contributions. And we do that. And we put in the G, experimental G, sites with the W, the Z pole, the top mass, the Z mass, and we get this expression, this result for lambda W. It's a nice number, just above the electrons, it's in the Baker scale 246 keV. Knowing lambda W allows us to solve the consistency equation with the W boson mass. So treating now lambda W as unknown, we solve using this expression, which is proportional to lambda W squared, so it has the right dimensions of mass squared. And this is the prediction. 80.05 GeV on the nail, which is 0.5% of experimental value. This is the tree graph level.
I've got confused. MW was not an input to that?
No. W? Z mass was
an just input. The Z.
You can turn it around, put the W mass in, you get the Z.
What about these other G and signs for
putting them on top? That is an input.
That's just for one parameter.
Yeah. So, if you compare this to the standard Higgs theory, then if you put in the standard model, you put in the W mass, experimental W mass, the Z mass, plus the field W, having this equal to 1, which is the tree graph level, you get 79.95 GeV, which is a bit off, it's not as good as what I get. So now from having this, I can now calculate rho, and I get 1.2003. This agrees well with the experimental ratio of Newton to charge curves. Now, in order to complete the calculation, I need to generate a correction. And I have to calculate this. And we've estimated this. And the estimate comes out to around 1%. And to I still haven't had time to finish the calculation, but it's not that difficult. And I'm hoping that when we do that, we will get this number. We have to get it to 1/1000. Now, in the standard case theory, you don't predict this mass in W. You need to know the Higgs mass. So in the global fit that we do, three groups. Remember the Higgs mass came out of 80 GeV plus or minus. And that's because the Higgs that Higgs mass gives you that number.
And I'm confused because in the standard model without the Higgs it has a certain number of parameters. If you add the Higgs, there's one new parameter, is that right? And you also have one new parameter, which is the mass, which is this.
No, but the points turns
so
out.
So why is it that?
No, because in the loop calculation, I get a self consistent.
Two new parameters. Six
minus 1/4.
Oh, right. I see. So in here, there's only one new parameter.
That's okay, fermion masses. I have to keep going and get my Fermi's masses from the field theory, not from the classical theory. So I ignore the Yukawa interaction in the standard model, which is a classical statement. And I do this loop calculation. And I demand that the Fermi and particle base this equation. So this is the proper sub-energy of the Fermi on the mass shell. And I get this result, and lambda F to notice the energy scales for lactam and crop masses. Now, a trivial solution would be to find a non-trivial solution. A trivial solution in perturbation theory just gives you, as we'll see in a moment, the Fermi mass is zero, if the gram mass is zero. So we go to the Lambert-Jones-Sinio reasoning. We have a broken symmetry vacuum state. So I recalculate my loop, self-energy loop graph, the going vector boson, my finite quantum field theory. And go through this, P equals zero, I get that. Now I identify the proper self-energy the fermion united in a measured fermion mass, the bare mass is zero, I get that. And this has non trivial solutions. The trivial perturbation solution is that MF is zero, of course, on both sides. The non trivial solution is that you get this equation, where E1 is the exponential integral.
So, what about the CKM matrix? What about the CKM matrix? You don't have a Tau sector giving mass to things.
Sorry.
CKM is
CKM.
Oh, that, I'm getting to that. So, putting in the electron weak coupling, I get this for the electrons. This is huge, of course. It just means that the electron is a point particle. I put in the strong coupling, the color factor, and I get the following answer. When I do the top quark, you know, lambda top is 16 V. Now,
but I'm confused. Are these new parameters or they're calculable? These lambdas.
At this stage, I'm not better than the standard model. I have 12 lambda sub X for the 12 quarks and lambda.
So the non-locality scale differs for different particles?
For different fermions. You can't use the lambda W for the boson result. You have to use a different fermion scale. And I mean, I'm getting to this. So it turns out that you can do a CKM matrix with the lambdas, because now we have a lambda-lambda prime coming in, and you can introduce charge vector boson flavor-violating contributions. And this gives you off-diagonal components CKM, and this could possibly give you a natural explanation for the...
So what's happening here? You have masses that come from these different cutoff scales for different fermions.
Yes.
So how are you getting... I'm just trying to read this and hear what you say at the same time. Can you just summarize how you get the CKM matrix?
Well, the lambda, the additional five off-diagonal lambdas coming in to the matrix.
Off-diagonal lambdas, what is that?
Off-diagonal contributions don't have the same lambdas as the diagonal.
So does it mean that the smearing is off, that the G function has an off-diagonal?
You have these fermion loops with different fermion species coming in, and you get a different lambda for those
than
for the same.
No, but let's go on, because...
So you have to choose all those off-diagonals?
Well, let me continue, because there's more. I'm not happy with what I just said, because there's indication that this isn't good, interesting. And we want to be more ambitious. So what we do is write down the Schwinger-Dyson equation, which was published in 1951. And this means that the fermion propagator is summed all over. We invert and we get this famous equation. So you can go through, now you have to bring in quark, as you can follow, you have to bring in confinement. The situation is getting complicated. We end up with a pretty mass gap equation. So, if you put the this MK in here, square root equal to, it's linearizing this equation, integral equation. Put MK, M squared K lambda F equal to dynamical measured fermion mass squared. This gives you a linearized mass gap equation, because you take the as usual, you take the bare mass, fermion mass to be zero. So you can solve this equation, and you get a non-trivial solution. It's a spectrum. You get an eigenspectrum for the masses, and this could lead to a fundamental determination of the fermion mass spectrum. That's the project I'm working on, the one that is at present. Now, from the Stanley-Yukawa interaction, understand, it's a classical statement, so you can never determine the fermion masses from there's been a great deal of publicity about the origin of mass is due to Mr. Professor Higgs, and I don't agree with that. If you can't, you have to, one of the important problems in particle physics is to determine the Fermion masses. We get rid of those 12 arbitrary coupling constants that we have at present. And this will, for me, will reduce the number of free grounds I have considered. Okay, now.
But I thought for any of the masses you have to introduce, you have to introduce a cutoff scale for each mass. So how are you getting rid of?
No, no, but the scheme is that when you solve this integral equation, it's a self-consistent equation. What I find is I only get one lattice of that. Once it's fixed, I can then make a prediction for the energy spectrum. This is a far more complete program than the thing I just showed you, the indication from a simple self-energy look graph.
So the claim is that you hope there will be one cutoff scale to get everything Fermion masses and also all the off-diagonal terms?
Right.
That's not worked out.
No. There are only 8 hours a day for me to work in. I took cosmology and modified gravity and longer. Anyway, it's an interesting problem. I hope maybe I could get someone interested in this building in doing this, but perhaps that's a vain hope. There are 100 theorists in this building. We should be working on these problems. These are very fundamental problems in physics, and they have experimental confirmation. Okay, so now, unitarity. The killer for any alternative atomic model is unitarity. Because it turns out that when you do W plus longitudinal, W plus minus longitudinal into W longitudinal, or annihilation positron into annihilation, then, as we'll see, they violate unitarity at the three level.
So we've already got me over. How much do you have left? Because we are going to get coming in here in about 10 minutes.
We finished. I could take another 2 hours, but I'm not going to do that. Another few minutes. When they turn up, I'll clear out. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Unless I'm boring you, we can continue.
Well, I think they're going to be here.
Now, so let's get to the chase. What happens is that because the masses are running in my scheme, the coupling constants have to run. And I can predict the running of these coupling constants through the loop calculations. So I do this, and we get this equation for g squared. Calculate this guy, and this is for the G prime, and I can calculate this one. This is a fixed number. And I do this, work this out here, and here's the calculation. It looks horribly complicated, but it isn't too bad. Patience. You work this out. And this is what you get. The masses are shown here, the running of the masses. This is the mass in GeV. This is the horizontal axis in GeV. And the dashed green line is the Z mass. And the W mass is described by the red dotted line. So this predicts that the G runs like this. And sine squared theta runs like that. Now, there's no deviation here from standard model until you get to TeV. Up to TeV, E plus E minus. Unfortunately, the LET2 stopped at 206 TeV. So this is a prediction for the linear hadron collider, which I'm told by my colleagues will never happen, but anyway. Okay, so we look at this crucial calculation. you add these three together to get a matrix element using these finite electric weak theory. Ratchet rules, Popkin rules, and throwing in the Higgs coming. And in the Hydrogen limit, the standard model of the Higgs uses this matrix element. This is for the Higgs. And this is including this graph. By the way, in the paper earlier with Victor Tuck, this is the most complete demonstration of how the Higgs particle works for unitarity that I know of. If you can't find it in the textbook, they're incomplete. So if you want to know how to do this, read our paper. This is a bonus for package that comes with this. It's not a trivial calculation, so students want to see how this is done. Anyway, so what happens is that in the Higgsless model, you get this, the g squared is running with energy. So the running constant g time and s times s comes like a constant for high s. But this is sufficient to ensure that the unitarity is not violated. Bingo! We're there. This shows what happens for the three level scattering between the longitude and the total. This is a particular angle. This is the black curve is my theory, electric weak theory. This is dashed is without the Higgs from the standard theory, Higgs theory, and this is what happens when you include the Higgs. Now, having done this calculation with the Higgs, I was very impressed with how it works. It comes out exactly right to cancel all the coefficients. You think, oh, well, I'm trying to compete with this. But I guarantee you I am competing with it, and I can test it. So, now you do this one, and you find the energy limit, which result. And notice that this is proportional to electron mass times the root s. Because the electron mass is so small, you have to go to extremely high energies to pick this up. If you put in the Higgs exchange, the plus and minus operation, you get exactly the same thing with the opposite sign. You think, ah, fantastic. Higgs has got to exist. Now, for me, I find that this is what I get from the matrix element, B plus or minus in relation, and there are no deviations from the standard model until you get to, which is standard models up here, no deviation until you get up around the TV, above the that to data, unfortunately. That's for the future. This is the current low energy result, sine squared theta. And you can draw a straight line through here. This is not, this is low energy precise data from the standard model. And I get the same result. I get a flat line, and then it starts going up and around the TV. There's no data for this, because this is not very good for the standard. There's been a lot of controversy about this. This is E plus E minus W plus W minus from LEP. This data is correct to 0.5%. So I have to get within 0.5% to get this result. Now, I've looked at the papers that do this. Overwhelmed, because to do that loop radiative corrections, you have to do them all to the order half. All of them. Because you have to introduce what's called the Yeni Frank-Shesura method of removing infrared singularities, which occur in the cross section. This is a cross section. And this is a nasty thing. And to do this, they had to use Monte Carlo simulations. Doing hundreds of loops. According to my discussions with Michael, who's an expert on this, this is what is it? You said you don't believe it?
Oh, I believe this. Monte Carlo is a general butler.
In general?
Are usually tuned.
Why do you believe this?
I have no questions.
Conclusions. So, I constructed an electron weak theory without a Higgs particle. And it's based on a finite quantum field theory. And the bottom line is there's no Higgs field field particle, no new particles, including the top of the structure. I proved that the charge is not violated of the treatment. However, the matrix elements for these processes do not deviate from the standard Higgs model above a TeV. So I wanted LHC people to measure these cross sections of matrix elements scattering amplitudes around 1.24 TeV. Apparently, this is not easy because these are polarized amplitudes. W is a formula. Anyway, talking to them, these people are very clever, so hopefully they can do it. The whole secret of electroweak circuit breaking lies in there, because these are the contributions from the vacuum, the spontaneous symmetry breaking of the vacuum. This is where you look for it. So they have to go and measure this to really answer the question, what breaks the electroweak circuit? So we predicted self-assisted calculation using this lambda W, and the W mass is predicted to have the same. Now we have to include the engineering corrections. The electroweak cosmological constant problem is solved without a fine tuning because there is no Higgs particle. So there is no problem. The Higgs hierarchy problem is solved without fine tuning because, again, there's no Higgs particle. This is the obvious solution to the problem. It's an obvious solution, but you have to find an alternative electroweak theory that works. This is not trivial. So, to me, the origin of mass in the universe is due to self-consistent solutions created to some energies, not to a classical scalar Higgs field and Yukawa interactions. End. Thank you.
Any final questions?
I have a couple of questions at sort of general or general level. What is, you say the hierarchy problem is solved. I'll just state both questions. One is you say the hierarchy problem is solved, but there's another hierarchy problem now. Which, I mean, the hierarchy problem is somehow the ratio of the Higgs mass to the Planck mass. I'm not sure if that's what you mean by it. If you mean it in that sense, then now there's a question, the ratio of your lambda W to the Planck mass. So that's a different hierarchy.
That's a different hierarchy.
It's a new, I mean, you traded one hierarchy problem.
Right. It's not the mother of all hierarchy problems, it's the cosmological constant problem.
Right.
And this is the sister of the mother.
Yes, sir.
When you put it that way. Yeah. And I can't say anything.
And then the second comment, well, it's a question comment. I mean, you took unitarity as sort of sacred, but you sacrificed causality. So it's like, why did you do that? And second of all, more importantly, if we can get a TeV center of mass energies, we should start seeing, in some sense, we should see these violations of causality. Can you think of some experiment that would, give us a direct signal of this kind of violation?
It turns out a very interesting result came out, which I didn't anticipate in my paper in 2007. This is since been proved in the case. But the scattering amplitudes fall off polynomially with S, as they do in a local quantum field. Whereas you would think of a non-local quantum field theory, they would fall off exponentially. This is a very interesting result. So it means that even though the loops are non-local, they still manifest locality. So there's something called the Martin Carolus balance, which was published many years ago in It's used as further ratios of electricity. If you prove that scattering aperture cannot fall off faster than some panels. In other words, it can't fall off faster than polynomial. And string theory, string perturbation theory violates this. This was shown by Gross, David Gross.
Thinking of the string people.
Yeah. in the 80s. This is not a well-known fact. So non-local string theory is non-local. And that's it. Really non-local.
We gotta go
because
they've already moved their talk back.
We're being driven out by the string.
Yeah.